Chapter 18. My Real Motives. I'll try to write about this calmly. I think that now I can. I'm a man who has loved only once, and I didn't know it until the woman I loved was dead. When I heard of her death, I didn't cry. I had a terrible sense of loss, but not grief. I understand now that I was in fact violently angry. But I didn't know it then. She was a very special person, sensitive, intelligent, and energetic. They caught her and shot her, for political reasons. Why? To put her, of all people, against a wall and shoot. Nothing could justify such a terrible act. I wanted revenge on the men who could do such a thing. That was why I had gone to their country. Now I knew the truth. Of course I would have killed the leader of the country if that young guard hadn't caught me. Once all this had become clear in my mind, I felt better. I must have fallen asleep at some point, for when I woke, I saw that there was water rising inside the burrow. When I pushed a stick into the drains to clear them, I found that they were blocked. Of course, Clive Smith had done this. The water made me uncomfortable, but didn't put me in danger. It would flow out under the door once it got high enough. I continued my quiet, careful digging for 3 more days. That evening, Clive Smith again tried to make me confess, but he didn't succeed. Finally, I heard him leave and his assistant arrive. I still had very little air, and that night I began to suffer from hallucinations. I seemed to see the woman I had loved in the burrow with me. I remember wondering how she had got in and imploring her to be careful. The night seemed to last forever, but finally those dreams passed. In the morning, I was desperate for air, and I banged my hand on the door.
"Stop that," ordered Clive Smith's assistant. "I've got orders to break in and shoot if you make a noise."
I decided to try and reason with him.
"I'm a rich man," I told him. "If I get out of here alive, I can make you independent for life." "Stop that," he said again.
I thought of pushing a banknote up through the ventilation hole, but it was too dangerous to let him know that I had money. He would have been able to force unlimited sums from me and give nothing in return.
"All right, I won't talk any more," I said. "But I want you to know that when they release me, I won't forget any help that you can give me."
He didn't answer, but he left the ventilation hole a little more open. That evening, Clive Smith tried a new technique. He tried to be friendly and told me quite a lot about his childhood. He hadn't been born in England, but he had been educated there. I knew that he was hoping to make me confess, but I knew his methods by now, and I refused to cooperate. I could tell that he was getting angry.
"I'll block the ventilation hole again if you don't talk to me," he finally said. "If you close the hole, I'll die and you won't achieve anything," I said. I still refused to sign the paper.
Clive Smith laughed.
"I'll give you all the air you want," he said.
Suddenly there was something cruel in his voice. Then I heard him push some kind of object into the ventilation hole. I said nothing, trying to decide whether to take it or not. I was frightened that he would grab my arm and try to pull me out of the hole. In the end, I pushed a stick up the hole and found a soft, rigid object. It was the body of Asmodeus. Clive Smith and his assistant had shot him. I was terrified and violently angry at the same time. I had loved Asmodeus very much. We had been through difficult times together, and he had been a good friend to me. Then I heard Clive Smith laughing again. Of course, he didn't know that Asmodeus had been my cat. He wanted to put a dead animal into my burrow so that I would suffer from the smell. He didn't know that the smell was already much worse than anything a dead cat could bring.